Good morning and welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. It's the Ailish Hour, hour four on Fan Morning Show podcast. You can catch all 3 hours of our text line Tuesday, where we talked to Ben Ennis and Dan Schulman earlier this morning. We bounced around some texts in 590-590. Lots of KD conversation. Ultimatums. I don't think that that's ever really been a great method of communication in any type of relationship, but there's an ultimatum out on the line. We will talk to Michelle Beadle in a couple minutes here. We're going to break that down. What's going to happen with KD? Also, we got just a couple star-studded guests in the 9:30 hour. Bianca Andreescu, you might have heard of her. She's playing tonight at the National Bank Open, which she won in 2019 on home court. She's back. She's going to be joining the show, followed by Jonathan Osorio. You might have heard of him. Toronto FC midfielder, Team Canada, TFC on the rise. Got a couple new faces, a couple familiar faces, stringing together some wins. He's tied for the lead in team goals. We're going to talk to both of those athletes after the 9:30 break. But let's get you pumped up for the NFL season just a little bit. Around the corner, Detroit Lions, they had a rough season to say the least last year. But this year, they're really taking on talking the talk. Now, they still got to walk the walk, but they're talking the talk. It's a team that's motivated. They're hungry. They're inspirational. And maybe those of you listening right now, you need a little extra push. You're driving into work on your Tuesday. It's gloomy. Humidity has just been tough to deal with in Toronto. Well, Dan Campbell, he's winning hearts and he's firing up anyone that will listen.
What are we? What makes us what we are and what we're going to be? It's our core foundation, man, grit. And what does it mean? In a nutshell, I think it means this. We'll go a little bit longer, we'll push a little harder, and we'll think a little. What are we? What? Like, to me, it means we'll play anywhere. We'll play on grass, we'll play in turf, we'll go to landfill. It doesn't matter. And that's what we got to be. That's who we have to be. Because we'll tread water as long as it takes to bury you. Let's go to work, man. It's about to be fun. O&D.
Okay, if that doesn't just get you ready to jump through a wall, this might. Second part of this. So now the Detroit Lions obviously are part of that Hard Knocks training camp HBO Max series. So we're getting a lot of great audio from behind the scenes. Dan Campbell, obviously the leader of the team. As you heard from that quote, yeah, he's firing his team up. But Jamal Williams got in the huddle and had the latest inspirational speech. This was yesterday. Here we go.
Jamal Williams, bring it up. I'm going to let y'all know, man, today is the minimum of effort. Do not give up. Do not feel like you're tired. Were you tired? Think of last year and think of that f***ing record. Every time I get tired or I think I can't go no more, I think of that f***ing record. Last year wasn't it. That ain't us. We can make it. Have some heart. I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry because I care about y'all. Do your best. Let's go. Lions on three. 1, 2, 3. Lions.
So Jamal's actually crying in that clip. The emotion just streaming through his veins. So every time you get tired or think you can't go anymore, as Jamal Williams says, have some heart. That's your motivational speech for Tuesday morning. Tuesday, one of the toughest days of the week, I think. So let's bring a little energy, a little positivity. I don't know about the positivity in terms of what's happening in New York. Kevin Durant, as I mentioned, going out with an ultimatum. It's me or it's these guys. Trade me or fire everybody. It's quite the demand. Could work out. You know, he's a guy that's proven to get what he wants. Michelle Beadle, host of What Did I Miss podcast at The Athletic and contributor for them and San Antonio Spurs broadcast team. Good morning, Michelle.
Oh, how are you?
We're doing well over here. Lots of spicy content coming out here yesterday with the NBA. Obviously, it's been quiet. The KD rumors have stopped circulating, but as soon as it's quiet, boom, he's back on the scene. So what on earth is happening in New York right now?
This just bums me out because I do think, like, Kevin Durant's not a bad guy. I think he does a lot of great things, and he's just an enigma. The way people bother him, the way strangers saying stupid things seems to get under his skin. Mm-hmm. It's just all very confusing. But this is, I mean, look, if you've ever been in a relationship of any kind at all, ultimatums don't work. Like, this is the worst possible situation you can put everybody in, because now what are you going to do? It's a matter of pride. It's a lot of egos involved. And is Joe Tsai supposed to just fire everybody because he says so? No, you can't do that either. He's also, I mean, he's really close to Steve Nash. If that's not something that's going to happen. So what bums me out the most, I think, is that when it's all said and done, Kevin Durant's legacy will be more of this kind of stuff than what he's capable of doing on the floor. And that bums me out. That's the worst part.
Oh, yeah, and I completely agree. And I wonder how you think it plays out in terms of if somebody is interested in trading for him down the road or adding them to his team, does this just lower his value, or is his on-court performance still the thing that a team would want, such as the Raptors or such as, you know, the Boston Celtics that are still kind of rumored to be in the running?
I mean, that's the thing about sports that's so great, right? Like, no matter how much we think someone is washed up or a bad guy or should not be wanted, somebody does. But it always happens. There's always somebody out there. There's a market for everyone. And again, he's still a great player. And the stuff that he does isn't criminal or bad or evil. It's just stupid. And it's not well thought out. And I think we live in a time where we sort of don't have a lot of foresight or interest in looking what's going to happen down 5-10 years down the road. And that's what this feels like. It's a very now moment type activity action that he's decided to take. And I just don't think it plays out in his favor, because everyone knows now he's desperate to get out. I think it drops to your value. And also, let's keep in mind, I don't want this headache. Like, I do not want this headache. You wanted everything. You got everything you wanted. Now you don't want any of it. So what is the next team supposed to do? They're going to sit there and wonder, when is the ball going to drop? When is he going to decide he wants to do all of those things again to us? And that's, it's fascinating to watch, again, because if you've been in a relationship, it's just sort of these patterns that play out. And I'm glad it's not my team that's involved, but I don't see a good ending. I just don't see a good ending. He's going to be forced to stay there. And how awkward is that going to be now? You've basically asked for everyone to be fired, and now you've got to show up for work. Going to be so weird.
Have we ever seen a player do, like, present an ultimatum like this ever with such weight and such, like, dramaticity of this opportunity to just make headlines? This must be a one-off.
I mean, it's like, we've had, obviously, there have been ginormous names, Kobe Bryant being probably the biggest one in recent memory that demanded a trade and then ultimately stayed. Scottie Pippen, same thing. I went back because I was trying to remember all the people that had done this, and I'd forgotten that LaMarcus Aldridge, when he was a Spur, basically was like, I'm out of here. And Greg Popovich said, look, if we can get someone that's equal to or better than you, I will literally walk you to the plane. I will sit you in your seat and I would say goodbye. But we're not gonna, so you're staying. And it ended up being his best year here, and he signed a 2-year extension. So I think if that's what's going to happen here, which, again, I don't think it will, because Popovich also had to realize he was coaching Aldridge in the wrong way. So he sort of had to reevaluate and do that differently. I don't know that that's going to happen here. I don't think it's a coaching situation that we're dealing with. So, yeah, this may not turn out as peaceful as these other ones ended up turning out, but who knows? If there's anything I can say for sure, is that I'm not shocked anymore. Anything could happen. It literally could happen in the next 10 minutes. Who the heck knows?
I hope we are on the air when it happens so I can get your instant breakdown. But if I gave you a crystal ball, and I know it's a tough one to read, what do you think is going to happen in this situation?
I think he stays. And I think we get a lot of real awkward buddy-buddy press conferences to show that everybody's fine. But I also think we all know, you know, you try to get me fired, there's no way in hell I'm going to be nice to you after that. There's just, I don't trust you. I don't want to be around you. We're not friends. So we'll see. But I do think I don't think he has much choice. I think he ends up staying.
Okay. So on the flip side of that, he gets his trade request. Who's in the best position to actually acquire him?
I mean, that's the thing. I guess it's still the only one left, I feel like, is Boston. Golden State's not going to do anything. I know he said Phoenix and Miami, but they don't. There's no real path there. So maybe Boston, but again, what is the end game? You're just going to keep jumping teams. It's just such a bad look. And I wish, I would love to know if you could give him truth serum and say, hey, man, if you could do all of this over again and just start from the beginning, would you change any of the ways that you've gone about this? I'd love to know in his heart of hearts what he thinks, because sometimes I think we get ahead of ourselves and we sort of go down a weird path and now we're too far in and it's hard to back out. And it's what it feels like here. But I don't know. Maybe he's 100% sure that what he's doing is the right way. I just, in my heart, I don't think it is. I think this has been a hot mess.
Yeah, it feels like spiraling and just trying to chase some sort of positive lining. But it doesn't seem that it's around the corner. But, okay, you say which teams might be in the running. Well, we still here in Toronto think that the Raptors are kind of rumored in that conversation. And they've had a pretty decent offseason in ways of retaining their key free agents. But the conversation is that the Raptors could still be in there with a Scottie Barnes package. Is it sensible for them to kind of go all in with where they're at right now with their core to acquire a KD for 1 or 2 years?
So the Scottie Barnes thing is the hang up, right? Like that's the big, it has to be part of it. Look, you guys, who am I to tell the Raptors what to do? You had Kawhi on a very much rental basis. You knew that and it completely worked 100%. So yeah, if anyone knows how to go about these short-term rentals, it's definitely you guys, Toronto Raptors. So I don't know, because then you're mortgaging your future for what may or may not be 1 or 2 seasons. You know, if it doesn't go his way, does he even finish a whole season, or does he immediately say, nope, this isn't it, next one? It's very Goldilocks, beds don't fit, blah, blah, blah. I'd be curious to see what you guys as fans, like, do you guys want that? Because I always
we're very divided.
I'm like, I don't know.
I think we're pretty divided. Okay. The idea that you're going to get a player who's one of the best players of all time is certainly intriguing. It's a very sexy name. But personally, Scottie Barnes is like the future of your team. He's just won Rookie of the Year. I think he's got ability to be one of the best Raptors of all time. I get nervous because of the things you lay out with Kevin Durant. If like he's not a guarantee. He might come here and be like, I don't like it. I don't want to play here. I don't like the coaching. I don't like the organization. I don't have enough great players around me because you got rid of Scottie Barnes. So I go through this every day as well. And we talk about it on the air and we have people text in that are one way or the other. So I do see the dilemma and I get worried about trading away your future for someone that isn't a guarantee.
Right. And the thing about a guy like Kevin Durant is, in order to go somewhere else, dude, they have to give up almost everything. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to a very diluted product, which is not what he wants. So it's almost unrealistic what he thinks is going to happen here. And again, I don't think it happens. I think he's going to be in a Nets uniform when the season starts.
Oh, boy. Well, I like that the saga is kind of undetermined until when it will end. So we're always on our toes up here, and I'm sure you're covering just thinking, well, it could happen, as you said, any moment. But we'll stay on the Raptors a little bit here. Where do you see them slotting in next year in the Eastern Conference? As I said, they added Otto Porter Jr., but, you know, they just kind of kept Chris Boucher and Thad Young and haven't done anything super splashy. Do you see them having a better season than last year?
Oh, I mean, that's like the $1 million question. I don't know, because it's hard to tell what the other ones, like, we don't know what Boston's going to do. We're still waiting on that shoe to drop. Milwaukee, I think, is fine. They're solid. They're going to stay there. Miami should still be there. Like, I mean, I'm the worst. Don't ask me for predictions, because I'm legitimately the worst person to do that. But I can't imagine they drop. That's the thing. As long as they don't do the Scottie Barnes thing. To me, is a no deal. Like, I'm not getting rid of Scottie Barnes. I don't care what the end game is on that. But I think as long as you keep that core together and just keep building forward, I think you guys are fine. Like, it's going to be fun to watch, but I don't know. I don't know that they're going to decide that they're going to give up the future for maybe 1 or 2 seasons of what could be sexy. I hope not. I don't think they're that rash. It's not the kind of team that I look to do things like. They're not the Lakers. Let's just put it that way. Like, the Lakers would do this. They would completely mortgage everything on the hopes of getting one more superstar for a team that can't figure it out. So, yeah, I don't think you guys will do that. I just keep saying you guys.
Yes, it's me. I am the president of the Toronto Raptors, actually. Welcome to the show. But I know it does feel like me at times. Like, our fan base is quite connected, especially online. So when something like this comes up, it's it is like a mob mentality of, well, we all agree on this, but we have no say. So I totally agree in the who knows what's going to happen. But okay, so you mentioned some of the superstar teams. We got LeBron James heading into year 20 of his career. There's been a lot of talk about maybe adding a Russell Westbrook this summer. Do you think that LeBron, Russell, Anthony Davis could actually make it work in LA under a new head coach, or is this just like another fever dream?
No, I don't think it. I don't. I think it's broken. The Russell Westbrook part is broken, which, by the way, completely unfairly. I mean, the way he was sort of made to take all of the blame was silly and stupid, and I'm still shocked that people bought that. So that, if that happens where they can figure out the Kyrie for Russell or somehow the money situation, maybe. But again, I'm not a huge buyer in Anthony Davis. I think there's a large school of thought, and I'm in that school of thought, that he's just not available. And sometimes when he is available, he doesn't really seem to be there. And that's really not what you want out of your superstar. Mm-hmm. You kind of need him engaged and hungry all of the time. And so I'm rooting for the new coach. I'm rooting for him just because I think this is a heck of an opportunity, and from all accounts, he is very much respected and liked. So I root for that. But unless they do something, there is nothing right now to point in a direction of positivity. Like, there's nothing that will have changed from last year. So, I mean, I root for the chaos. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's much more fun for all of us to talk about. So I kind of hope it stays the way it is. But for Russell Westbrook's sake, I do hope he gets out of there, because that will never go back. That one's broken.
Yeah, the rooting for the chaos. You're not alone in that. We have radio shows and podcasts to talk about, so we would love some chaos. Donovan Mitchell could be someone that might bring some chaos. Lots of buzz around him this summer. Do you think he's going to be moved before the start of the season?
I kind of thought it would have already happened. Like, there was that probably 2 or 3 week stretch where I thought, oh, okay, so this is happening. There's a lot of movement, what have you. And then it just sort of stopped. So I don't know. I mean, I would love the idea of him playing in New York. But again, this New York, very much like the Lakers. Like, it's a team that just, and much more so, I should say, the Knicks being much more dysfunctional for a much longer period of time. But it's, even if they did get him, I wouldn't be shocked if they blew it. And that's what's crazy and also fun about the Knicks. They are so desperate as a fan base and hungry, and deservedly so, to be relevant and in the talks. But there's just something about that organization, probably named Dolan, that is just going to prevent it from happening for quite some time. But I for Donovan Mitchell's sake, I do want to see him move. He's one of those guys where I'm like, okay, I know he's not happy, but we know what he's capable of. I'd love to see him in a situation where he's thriving and actually wants to be, to see what he can do. So I hope he gets moved before the season starts, but it's odd that it's sort of quieted down.
Mm-hmm. Were you a big Bing Bong girl?
Remember? What's Bing Bong?
Remember the Knicks were Bing Bong? You remember that?
Oh, Bing Bong.
You mentioned the Knicks, and I was like, oh, I forgot.
I know. I like, having lived there for 13 years, I just want them to be part of any conversation.
I mean, they're very fun.
Not as a joke. Yeah, it's like, it's the thing. It's just, I think it's like the Dallas Cowboys. Like, I think there's certain ownership groups that, as long as they're in charge, there's a curse, and it's just not going anywhere. So I think that's what the Knicks are. They fall in that.
It's tough. I'm glad I'm not a part of that fan base. I know. Okay, so I know you are a Spurs fan, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you feel about DeJounte Murray being traded to the Hawks this offseason? Oh. Ooh, tough one.
You know, well, first of all, I love that DeJounte Murray gets traded, and all of a sudden he's like Mr. Billy Bad A. Like, he's just out there doing all kinds of stuff, and I kind of like it. But look, I know it from the outside looking in, it was obviously shocking, and I could totally see that. But then when you start to, like, learn a little bit more, and, you know, he didn't want to sign an extension. So I think the bad taste that Kawhi Leonard left in the mouths of everyone here was just the idea of redoing that was not going to happen. Like, they're not going to lose somebody of high caliber and then get nothing back. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the thinking here. I was like, all right, he's not going to sign. Let's move forward and sort of build. So it does look crazy, I know, on the outside, but I think it made a lot of sense within the Spurs organization. So, and look, he's provided at least a 2 weeks worth of fun to talk about with his poop talking and, like, going after. I mean, I'm here for that. So we'll see. Maybe he'll have a lot more fun in Atlanta, and he'll be a lot more vocal because he'll be allowed to be. That'll be good for us.
That is good for you guys. Okay, so now with him no longer part of the Spurs, what are your expectations for that team this year?
I mean, not a lot, but it'll be fun. And look, last season was the exact same way. I mean, granted, we had Murray still, but it was a preseason sort of meeting with everyone of like, look, these are the expectations. Let's be realistic. And it actually ended up being a really fun season to watch. They're so young and they're so quick and fast and fun. And you know, it seems like they genuinely like each other. So I'm here for that. And you know, with the new guys they just got, I think it'll be another one of those. There are no expectations. We're not delusional. We're not going to win the championship. But if it can be fun and entertaining and the games are good to go to, then I'm here. I'm good for it. Because I have been, look, I was with the Nets when they won, I think, 21 games or so. I've been a part of some really bad seasons as an observer. And I get it. And they're not always fun. But sometimes they can be, and I'm okay with that.
You and I are the same. Fun, yeah. Chaos, storylines.
Yeah.
I like the vibes.
Entertain me. That's all I want.
That's what sports are about, right? I need to be entertained, especially in a quiet summer. You know, we're looking for anything. So we'll have to catch up post KD stuff and chat more about it, Michelle. Appreciate you coming on the show this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Michelle Beadle, host of What Did I Miss podcast at The Athletic and a contributor there in San Antonio Spurs broadcast team. Love that energy. She's, you know what? She probably listened to the Dan Campbell and Jamal Williams clips while she was on the line, pumping us up for your Tuesday, making sure you're fired up. We actually had a text line in saying, well, Lions just became my Super Bowl dark horse. I'm telling you, if you have talk to talk, it's going to inspire your team. Would they win 3 games last year? I don't know, maybe 7. Is that a lot to ask for this year? I don't know if I'll be using my fantasy football drafts picks on a lot of Detroit Lions, but if you could draft most passionate, enthusiastic team, best speeches, it could be them.
I get emotional about this. I'm about to cry because I care about y'all.
That's right. I care about y'all. That should be the A-list, A-lish hour mantra. I care about the listeners. I want you guys to have an incredible start to your day after you listen to JD and I for 3 hours and you just get me now. Sounds like a good trade-off. Okay, so as I mentioned, Bianca joining us after the break. Jonathan Osorio joining us after the break. It was day one of the National Bank Open yesterday. Canadians, Layla, winning in 3 sets. It was a tough one last night. I was nervous. She went to a tie break in the second set, able to close it out. Whew. She felt good, though. She's been battling some injury. The biggest storyline after the game was, I feel great. My body feels great. The amount of sweat that those two had pouring off, I can't imagine being in attendance yesterday as a fan, let alone playing for 2 to 3 hours. Shout out to them. I played only in an air-conditioned arena my entire life. Never had to complain about the elements, but she's through. Chapo down one set yesterday, game suspended due to weather, so no results on that. But we actually have a bunch of Canadians playing today. On the women's side, Rebecca Marino, we had Carly Agro on yesterday. If you remember, you can listen to the podcast. If not, she's big on Rebecca Marino. I asked which Canadian has the best chance at taking home a title at the National Bank Open. She kind of went the sleeper. Rebecca Marino's been in and out, quiet. She's one of those underdogs that, you know, the spotlight's obviously on Bianca, on Layla, on Felix, kind of the big names headlining Canada, but Rebecca Marino. So she's playing today. We got a couple other Canadians. You gotta stay tuned basically all day because the game started at 11 and they go till as of last night, like midnight. So don't turn your dial. Don't turn your TV off. SportsCenter's got it all day. I'm actually going to be able to go to the National Bank Open today to see Bianca. I'm going to not fangirl. I mentioned this yesterday or 2 days ago. I was Bianca for Halloween 3 years ago. I don't think I'm going to tell her that. I might just tweet out the photos. Honestly, it was iconic. Probably the best costume I've ever done for Halloween was Bianca. And her mother, a friend of mine, was her mom, and who's also an icon with the dog. So pretty incredible. I will be tweeting that out later. Actually, just breaking news here before we go to break. Serena Williams says she plans to retire after the U.S. Open. That just came across my phone right now. Sportsnet alert. That is huge news. We talked about this yesterday with Carly Agro. What's the plan for Serena? Is she going to continue kind of gutting it out here, making this comeback? Well, seems that she says, I've never liked the word retirement. It doesn't feel like a modern word to me. I've been thinking of this more as a transition, but I want to be sensitive of how I use that word, which means something very specific to me and a community of people. Maybe the best word to describe what I'm doing is evolution. I'm here to tell you that I'm evolving away from tennis towards other things that are important to me. So breaking news, Serena Williams going to plan to retire after the U.S. Open. She won yesterday, so you get more opportunity to see her at the National Bank Open. We're going to talk to someone that you'll be able to see tonight and maybe get her thoughts on probably a legendary figure in her mind, inspirational as a tennis player, Bianca Andreescu. That's after the break. It's the Ailish Hour on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show. It's the Ailish Hour, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. As I just mentioned before break, breaking news, Serena Williams announcing that she will be retiring after the U.S. Open. She's won 23 Grand Slam titles. One shy of Margaret Court's all-time mark of 24. Still got a couple more chances. Yesterday, she won her first game match since 2021 French Open. So a good start towards that. Obviously, the icon and arguably the best women's tennis player of all time. Tennis player, even of all time. Somebody that I grew up watching, grew up idolizing. She's got that competitive spirit that no matter her time and place or physical abilities or struggles that she's had in her career, she brings it every night. We talked to Carly Agro yesterday and how she said that doesn't matter if Serena's at the end of her career, she looks as fierce as always. You were able to see that yesterday at the National Bank Open, who you'll be able to see today at the National Bank Open, who I'm going to be seeing tonight. Bianca Andreescu, our own hometown hero, the 2019 U.S. Open champion, 2019 National Bank Open champion, and a WTA pro. Bianca, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. I know you got, a couple bigger things today on your plate, but appreciate the time you can spend with us before we get into what's happening tonight. I just want to get your initial thoughts on Serena Williams. Just announced her retiring after the U.S. Open. I'm sure she's been, quite the inspirational figure in your career, one of the greatest competitors of all time, someone you've faced, someone you've beat. It's been five whole minutes, okay? But any thoughts on the legacy that she's had goodness. And what she'll leave behind? It can be quick.
Well, that's crazy news to wake up to. I had no idea.
Sorry, I put you on the spot.
No, you're good. You're good. Well, I am a bit shocked. I mean, at one point, I'm sure it was happening, but hearing it is just so crazy. I mean, she is a legend. I'm so grateful I had the chance to play her, and she did amazing things for the sport, and hopefully, maybe I can get one more match in before she actually does retire.
Yeah, I mean, that would be obviously a really incredible rematch between the two of you, at least. Do you have any, specific moments? Like, I know you're young in your career, and she's been someone that's been quite established. Is she the type of person to pull you aside or give you any words of wisdom or just be a familiar, inspirational force around the tour?
So after the U.S. Open, she came up to me in the locker room and she was super, super nice. She complimented me on the game and how I can help inspire the next generation. And she actually said, she joked around, she's like, if I had to choose somebody to win the tournament, it would have either been you or Venus. So I thought that was cute.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah, between you and her sister, that's pretty good competition to be in for the person she wanted to win. Incredible. So that will be more news to come. I'm sure you'll be asked about it quite a lot today. So let's at least we prepped you for that. Okay, so you're back home playing on home court tonight, prime time, at a tournament you've won. You got the Canadian crowd behind you. Does this ever hit you when you're like, damn, this is pretty awesome. I'm really excited to be here and almost humbled to be in this position?
Definitely. I mean, I practiced for the first time on site 2 days ago, and yeah, all emotions from back in 2019 just came through, and I had one of the best practices I had in a really long time. So I think that's a good thing. Getting ready for my match tonight has been great. I'm feeling good, and yeah, hopefully I can pull it off.
Does a week like this come with like any added distractions for you other than coming on my show? Of course, are you pretty much dialed in like any other tournament?
No, for sure. I am very dialed in, but I do have a bit more commitment. So people are kind of pulling me aside to do different things. But I mean, I love it. I love connecting with my fans. I had a book signing yesterday. I had like a mini Q&A with some kids. And yeah, I love doing it. But I'm definitely locked in and I'm ready to go for tonight.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to be in the crowd. So can't wait to cheer you on in person. So I know you mentioned last week, you're feeling like, you know, a little bit better in terms of physicality. You had to withdraw from the last tournament, but feeling at 100% going into tonight?
Yes, right now I'm feeling 100%. I've been taking it day by day since last week, but I'm just so happy that everything turned out to be really good.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm ready.
I love to hear that. We're excited to see you back in action. But in the last year or two, there's been some tougher moments. You've been in and out of competition. So how do you ground yourself when you're going through those struggles? And maybe what you've learned from yourself in the past couple of years since you were last a winner here?
Yeah, I feel like I react to things in a more healthier way. I try to see the positive in everything, even when things aren't going my way, and I kind of get through that with meditation. I like to just sit down with myself and try to block out all the noise around me. It really helps me stay in the present moment, and I also think about, you know, all the things that I'm grateful for, and I stay committed to my goals. I love playing this sport, and I'm just super grateful that I can play in this tournament, especially since what happened last week.
It's great. It's great timing that you're back to full health, as you said. So we're talking to Bianca Andreescu. You know, she's a big star tonight, specifically hometown kid, but we're really excited to see you back after the injury. I want to get a little bit deeper in the mental side of sports. So I was a hockey player, but, you know, not nearly as good as you are. But what's that mental training like for tennis? Because I feel like, you know, it's an individual sport. A lot of that can be pressure on your own shoulders when you're not performing up to speed. You don't have a team around you specifically on the court with you to kind of like buffer that type of pressure. What is it that you do specifically, or is there a team you train with that helps with the mental side of being a tennis player?
Yeah, I used to work with a psychologist, but now I'm kind of just doing my own thing. And I learned from everyone that I worked with. I do a bunch of different like visualization exercises, meditation exercises. For instance, like before my match, I'll visualize how I want to execute my tactics. Mm-hmm. And an important part of visualization is really feeling all the feelings that you would during the match to make it that much more real. And then the meditation aspect, I just like to sit with myself and focus on my breathing, or I'll focus on something that I'm grateful for, just to put me in a very positive mindset through the chaos that tennis can bring. Really helps me just bring me back to the present moment. And obviously working on the court, working in the gym, really pushing myself hard, that builds, you know, the discipline muscle, the commitment muscle. And, just how you react to things. I really try to make sure that, you know, I don't have like a mental breakdown or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I try to look at the positive in things, because that can really take your energy away.
And I'm sure a lot of that comes with experience. Like when you're a young player, it's hard to put yourself through the ups and downs. You have to live through it and you have to kind of find your way. And everybody would have a different strategy, I believe, to how they can get themselves in and out of ruts. So you're back home, but when you're on the road,
right, yeah,
what's the thing you miss most about being home? except for family and friends. You can't cop out with that answer. You got to give me a couple of things you miss about being in Toronto when you're on the road.
Yeah, I mean, just being in the city. I grew up here. I love coming down on Lakeshore. I love taking walks by the water. I love going to different restaurants. I like going to a restaurant called Dasha, Baro. I love going to the movies. I started picking up martial arts. So Ooh. Whenever I come back now, like I'll do some martial arts training or some dance training. Just like get me away from, you know, what I normally do. And I absolutely love it. Hopefully, you know, I come back here more often, but that's not always the case.
Reservations at Dasha and Baro just went through the roof. Appreciate you coming on today, Bianca. We wish you all the best. Can't wait to see you back in action and you know, looking to get another one of these National Bank Open championships under your belt. So thank you again for joining us.
Yes, why not? Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Appreciate it. That was Bianca Andreescu, 2019 U.S. Open champion and 2019 National Bank Open champion. Toronto girl hitting the court tonight, prime time. You can watch it on Sportsnet. Can't wait to see it live in person. And somebody else that is a local hero, local legend. We're just running through the local sports figures today. Jonathan Osorio, Toronto FC midfielder, is joining me right now. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
How's it going? Well, we just had Bianca on, so we got a pretty good power hour here. Another hometown star talking about playing back here in Toronto. I'm thinking you probably have also felt a shift in the fan base over the past few weeks, the heightened optimism with the team. How's BMO Field felt these past weeks?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the last game we were there, it was pretty electric. you know, the atmosphere is something that I think we haven't felt in a while. So, no, it was great. It was great to see that. Obviously, we have some new faces in the crowd now, a lot more Italian, but we welcome that. We welcome that because they're bringing the energy.
You guys are good with having bandwagoners, right? You don't take it personally when you got new fans joining the fold. You just want to embrace everybody to head down to BMO Field?
Yeah, we don't mind. but what I would say is that when it really comes down to it, and especially I think when we win, I think we really appreciate the supporters that are there even when things aren't well. So when we win, it's especially for those supporters that are there through thick and thin. But of course, we welcome bandwagoners as well.
I'm sure there's a couple that are listening and that have been able to follow the team over the last couple of weeks. So how much of this optimism around the team and this energy do you pay tribute to with the new faces of Bernadeschi, Insigne, and Larea, to say the least?
Yeah, of course. I think that's the main reason. Mm-hmm. They are the main reason. Those players are the main reason that there is a buzz in around the city, around the team. And I think it's normal. It's normal when you make acquisitions like that, you know, good players and are going to make the team better, which is going to make the team play better and make the team start winning. And that's what brings the fan base. That's the culture here in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And the fans want and deserve a winning teams. And so, yeah, it's pretty normal, and it's definitely due to the signings of you know, Insigne, Bernadeschi, Richie Larea, Marc-Anthony Kay, all these players, all these new players that have come in.
And clearly it's helped propel you guys to a couple more big victories. You're coming off three crucial points in your win over Nashville on Saturday. You net two goals. It really seems like you've found your form lately. What are you feeling has been the biggest shift throughout the season for you?
No, I think I just, you know, I've been doing what I've been as far as preparation, everything, and improving. I in the off season, everything. There's nothing really that I changed. I kept, you know, to my same mentality and routine, which is trying to get better. And I think it's just all coming together and showing this year, as well as me feeling physically at my best. I think You know, it's been a long time since I've felt physically at my best, and I think that's an important part for me. So, along with that, with the new coach, you know, new coach coming in and giving me that confidence and playing me in the role that I'm comfortable in, I think all those factors has led to, you know, me playing the way I'm playing, and now I'm just happy that you know, the team is coming together and we're able to you know, we're able to get some confidence and try and make a run in these last 10 games.
So I have to compare and contrast with what I asked Bianca as well. So she's a tennis player. It's a very individual sport in terms of your performance. You guys are on, obviously, the opposite of that, a big team that relies on each other. But when things aren't going well for you individually, what are the mental side of the game, the approaches that you take? I know you said you're feeling physically at your best for a while, but what is it that you do or what the team does when that isn't the case?
Oh, you just, you know, you have to lean on each other. I think the main thing when you see when guys are low on confidence or anything like that, you have to lean on each other. And I think that's the beauty of being playing in a team sport. You know, you have your teammates, your brothers that can pick you up and, you know, give you that confidence when maybe, you know, you can't get it yourself. And so, yeah, that's the main thing, is always having a positive mentality no matter what and trying to pick each other up and make each other better.
Do you personally do any type of visualization, mental, approaches with sports psychology or Bianca was saying some meditation. Is that something you practice or is that, you know, not a part of your game at the current moment?
Visualization and manifesting is something that I do every day in my life. I believe in that. I believe that, like, when you're chasing goals, that you're always thinking about it and that you're always pushing for it, as well as, you know, your downtime too. I think, you know, obviously you have to disconnect at times and give your mind and your body a rest at the right times. But yeah, I think for me, the visualization and manifesting too, you know, and I think manifesting is a real thing. When you say, you know, when you chase your goals and you say you're going to achieve them and you remind yourself of what you are working for every day, I think those things all help you get to your goals.
So manifesting, is that something that you and the team are doing in the hunt for that final playoff spot in the East? I feel like you're right there in the hunt, currently 4 points back. You visualizing that big playoff berth?
Yeah, of course. I think we all believe, you know, we really believe that we can make a push and get into the playoffs. And we believe if we can get into the playoffs, that we can contend for the MLS Cup. So, yeah, we know it's going to be hard. We understand what's at stake. But at the same time, yeah, we are telling each other that we believe and we are working towards doing that.
Okay, last thing I'll ask you, visualizing the World Cup coming up in November, what are the expectations as a group for what Canada makes their first appearance since 1986?
It's our first World Cup in more than 30 years. I don't know if there's, I don't know what's the expectation from the outside, if any, but within the group, we expect to compete. We want to compete and we want to surprise maybe a lot of, you know, the public and the outside eye with our play. We want to show that us qualifying for the World Cup is no fluke, and we are a footballing nation. We are a really good team, and so yeah, our goal is to, I think, as any team, is to get out of the group, and then after that, it's trying, you know, you try to win every game, and that's the mentality that we'll be taking, and I'm sure every team will be taking. So, yeah, for us, it's we're looking to surprise a lot of people.
Well, we'll certainly catch up with you much before you are heading to the World Cup. Appreciate you joining the show this morning. Keep it up, and we will be watching with an intent eye whether we're a bandwagoner or not.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much. Jonathan Osorio, Toronto FC midfielder. As I said, TFC, they're turning it around. They got the new faces. They got the passionate fan base, BMO Field, full of red and white. It's been really exciting to watch. Jonathan, as I said, tied for team lead in goals. He's been red hot as of late. It's an exciting time to be a fan of any Toronto teams or any Canadian athletes. As I mentioned, we got the National Bank Open tonight. Bianca, who joined us, will be out there for prime time. If you missed the midway part of the show, Serena Williams announcing that she will be retiring after the U.S. Open. So she's got a little bit of time to capture that world championship best ever in terms of Grand Slam titles, but she already kind of holds that place in everyone's heart as the greatest female player of all time. Her last major win, though, was back at the Australian Open. If you remember, she beat her sister Venus while she was pregnant. So hopefully that's not the last one that she wins, but a pretty memorable one, to say the least. She got her first victory in singles last night at the National Bank Open, so looking to string together a couple good performances. But her messaging was that she's ready to evolve into the next part of her career. She's obviously dedicated her whole life to being not only a mentor, a leader, a humanitarian, an inspiration to boys and girls all over the world that want to play tennis or want to be competitive athletes. So you can take a look. Actually, she's in Vogue. That's where she announced this. There's a Vogue, profile on her that came out this morning after she kind of dodged questions a little bit yesterday, saying that, you know, the end could be around the corner. Clearly that Vogue article was already written. Maybe she just didn't want to spoil the news, clearly, but it's out now. Serena Williams, U.S. Open will be the last one, and I'm sure she'll have an illustrious career post-playing, to say the least. So take a look at National Bank Open presented by Rogers the next couple of days. We've got lots of Canadians in the mix today. Our feel-good story. 16-year-old Jada Lee, keeping it with the girls' power hour, all right? She's at the Canadian Summer Games on Monday, which has been going on. She was the flag bearer for Newfoundland and Labrador. She became the first female to play in the male baseball competition since it began back in 1967. Carrying two honors, the flag bearer and the first ever woman to play at the team event as a 16-year-old. In 2021, she broke some other barriers, pitched for the only win at the Newfoundland and Labrador U-17 boys baseball team in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. First woman to claim that honor. Now she's continuing up the rankings. So she pitched 1 1/3 innings for Newfoundland and Labrador, including a scoreless fourth inning. Wondering if the Blue Jays might be interested in her work. She seems to be a free agent in terms of signing with an MLB team. The baseball that she threw will be enshrined in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in St. Mary's, Ontario. She's awesome because she is confident, not cocky. She knows what she's got. She knows that she's breaking history. One of the best quotes from her, there's definitely a few parents who are like, is that a girl? Mainly in the field that you don't hear anything. But when I'm pitching, you'll hear in the dugout, is that a girl? But when I actually throw the ball, I don't know. They all shut up. Incredible. I love that mentality. I remember playing boys hockey and actually hiding my hair in my jersey and in my shoulder pads because I wasn't confident being the only girl on the team, on the AAA boys team. And, you know, we had a couple other girls in the league, but I was nervous. I didn't want people to know I was a girl. Now, proudly, Jada Lee, she's like, damn right, I'm a girl and I'm better than these guys and I'm breaking records and I'm already a legend. We have the audio clip of her big strikeouts to get a scoreless inning. It's only a little clip, but it's all right. I know it's quiet, but that's the thing. We need to get some more audio clips at these Canadian summer games, okay? Broadcasters, I'll go out there and I'll cover Jada Lee if you need me, Rogers. That's your feel-good story for the day. Keep an eye on Jada Lee, 16-year-old, at Blue Jays, if you're listening. Might be a good bullpen arm for you. All right, that's it for today on the A-List Hour. Appreciate you for tuning in. We had Michelle Beadle. We had Bianca Andrescu, Jonathan Osorio. The Fan Morning Show, first 3 hours. You can get that on the podcast and also the A-List Hour, specifically hour 4. See you tonight at the National Bank Open.